Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome back to the program that helps you learn American English. We come to you every day from Washington on VOA. Today we begin with a story about Cambodian children. Many young people in that Asian nation leave school and go to work. Officials say that while this is not good, some improvements have been made aimed at keeping children in school. We'll have details. Then, something from the United States. Homeless people with mental health problems have just been given a gift. We will tell you what it is and who gave it to them. Now, on to part one of As It Is. Earlier this year, a United Nations report found that 10% of Cambodian children between the ages of 7 and 14 are working. That is one of the highest rates in Southeast Asia. The report said one in four Cambodians, aged 7 to 14, are forced to drop out of school to help their families. UN officials say the child labor rate in Cambodia has dropped over the past 10 years, but the country has a lot more to do to keep a greater number of children in school. Mario Ritter tells us more.
One story begins at a factory in Cambodia. The factory manufactures bricks for building projects. Outside the building, 15-year-old Piep and her mother Trup are turning pieces of dirt. Piep has worked at the factory for 1 year. She was taken out of school after 2 years to support her father, who was sick. Some of the money she earned went to her 10-year-old sister and baby brother. Piep and her mother each earn $80 a month. They work 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. Piep says working in the factory helps her mother provide for their family. It also helps support her brother and sister. About 430,000 Cambodians under 18 years of age are employed. Half of them work in what the International Labor Organization calls the worst forms of child labor. They include agriculture, salt production, housework, fishing, and brickmaking. Veng Hing is director of the Child Labor Department in Cambodia. He says the number of child workers has been nearly cut in half since 1999. He says the country wants to lower that number to 375,000 by the end of the year.
Not only in 2015, but after 2015, we had to work very carefully on quality of education, food security, and especially income generation for the poor.
Targeting areas like agriculture and fisheries has helped reduce the number of child laborers. In the future, making sure Cambodian children stay in school will be important. World Vision is a non-profit group. It seeks to reduce child labor by offering assistance for both education and for household livelihoods. The group operates a 4-year project called Excel. The project receives financial support from the U.S. Department of Labor. World Vision says its Excel program in Cambodia has already helped 20,000 children. The group's Imelda Ochavio says Cambodians are becoming less tolerant of child labor. But she says more is needed to solve this complex issue.
If you want to reduce it significantly, we should have a very comprehensive, you know, comprehensive interventions that would include like continuous poverty alleviation, provision of alternative sources of income.
She says child labor is usually not a major issue for children under age 12. Most remain in their villages and attend school. But it is between the ages of 12 and 17 that child labor becomes an issue. Piyup dreams of finding a job in a clothing factory. That could double her wages. Her mother, Trup, wants more for her, too. She says she does not want her daughter to work in the brick factory. But a better future for Trup's family is far from guaranteed. The local school will not admit her other 10-year-old daughter. The girl is needed to look after her baby brother anyway. However, without an education, it is hard to find a way out of poverty. I'm Mario Ritter.
You are listening to the Voice of America from Washington. Each day, thousands of people with mental illness are living on the streets of cities and towns across America. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development says one-fifth of the 610,000 homeless across the country suffer from a mental illness. Doris Buffett is the sister of investor and billionaire Warren Buffett. She has donated $1 million through a nonprofit organization to house homeless people with mental illness. Marcia James tells us about the sister of the famous investor.
Doris Buffett is a philanthropist, a wealthy person who gives money to help make life better for other people. She lives in the small town of Fredericksburg, Virginia. Her recent gift of $1 million went to a local nonprofit called Micah Ecumenical Ministries. She says she is happy to help homeless people with mental illness find new homes.
I am overwhelmingly happy that due to my brother's brilliance, and he's had good luck, we've all agreed we all had good luck one way or the other, and that I can do what my heart wants me to do, and this is it. And I'm determined to give all my money away before I die.
Vicki Chevrette and her brother Jerry Grimsley were among 20 people to receive homes as part of this effort. They still remember that cold January day when they packed up their tents and stepped into a real house for the first time in 3 years.
Couldn't believe it. It was wonderful. It was warm. It was solid.
Warm. Well, we didn't have to worry about the snow no more or the rains because we used to get flooded. We had to go buy a pump and everything to pump water out from our tent sections.
Megan Cotter is the director of Micah Ministries. She organized the purchase of 7 so-called Buffett houses. To live in one, she says residents must pay $300 rent per month per room or do volunteer work to make up for the part of rent they cannot pay from the government. It pays for the rent for their home. The home provides her with privacy and comfort. Since moving into the house, Vicki Chevrette has been mentally stable. She now can remember to take her medicine instead of worrying about where to take a bath. And she loves her kitchen with its granite countertop and new appliances.
Everybody that comes into this kitchen says they want it.
Doris Buffett's contributions have helped Micah Ministries cut the number of homeless in the city by 58% over the last 5 years. The philanthropist says she is extremely happy with this project and plans to donate even more money in the future. I'm Marcia James.
You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. China's economy is growing slowly after years of strong gains. Some China watchers in the United States say the Chinese economy is slowing to a halt. They use the word stagnating. They say stagnation is a real threat unless new reforms can bring big changes to the Chinese economic system. How the economic stagnation could affect the United States has caught the attention of some U.S. policymakers. Matt Salmon of Arizona is a member of the House of Representatives. At a recent congressional hearing, he said China's quest for development and global influence has come at a high cost of alienating partners and allies alike. There are cracks in the foundation, and imbalances remain politically, economically, and militarily. Chinese government statistics show China's economy grew at its slowest rate in 24 years in 2014. The growth rate was under 8%, compared to rates of 10% or more a few years ago. The International Monetary Fund has predicted that China's gross domestic product will grow at a yearly rate of 5.9% over the next 6 years. The GDP is a measure of the size of an economy. Derek Scissors is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C. He said China's economic slowdown is not avoidable. He said the problem is more than 10 years old. He said the economy started slowing down in 2003. At that time, the government, under Hu Jintao, pushed aside market reforms in favor of public investment, directing finance by the state largely through state-owned enterprises. From 2003 to 2008, the Chinese economy was getting bigger and getting less healthy, he said. The following year, it started to show signs of stagnation. At the congressional hearing, another House member asked whether the stagnation will lead to a collapse. Derek Scissors said he does not believe stagnation will lead to China's collapse. He also said a slowing of the economy does not mean China has lost its significance in the world. He said the mixed economy that China has doesn't lend itself to acute economic crisis. He added that the country can stay in the same state a long time without major changes. Jerome Cohen is a professor at New York University. He said China is facing problems, but he said the U.S. should not underestimate the imagination and dynamism of Chinese leaders in meeting international economic problems. He said one example of this is the new Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank and related organizations. And that's the Economics Report. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look back at some of the social issues and cultural changes in America in the 1970s and 80s. In some ways, the 1980s seemed like the opposite of the 1960s. The 60s were years of protest for social justice and change. Many Americans demonstrated against the Vietnam War. Blacks demonstrated for civil rights. Women demonstrated for equality. Many people welcomed new social programs created by the government. By the 1980s, however, many people seemed more concerned with themselves than with helping society. To them, success was measured mainly by how much money a person made. People wanted to live the good life, and that took money. The changes started to become evident during the 1970s. For a while, these years brought a continuation of the social experiments and struggles of the 60s. But then, people began to see signs of what society would be like in the 80s. There were a number of reasons for this change. One reason was the end to America's military involvement in Vietnam after years of war. Another was the progress of civil rights activists and the women's movement toward many of their goals. A third reason was the economy. During the 1970s, the United States suffered a recession. Interest rates and inflation were high. A shortage of imported oil as a result of tensions in the Middle East only added to the problems. As the 1970s went on, many Americans became tired of economic struggle. They also became tired of social struggle. They had been working together for common interests. Now, many wanted to spend more time on their own interests. This change appeared in many parts of society. It affected popular culture, education, and politics.
Let me hear your idea again.
Okay, I want us to watch Jack Lemmon and a group of famous scientists discuss pollution and ecology on Channel 13.
Good. And I want to watch football highlights on Channel 2. Now, guess what's going to happen?
One of the most popular television programs of that time was a comedy series that often dealt with politics and serious social issues. The show was called All in the Family. The family was led by a factory worker named Archie Bunker. Carol O'Connor played Archie, and Gene Stapleton played his wife, Edith. The Bunkers lived in a working-class neighborhood in the Queens borough of New York City. Archie represented the struggles of the blue-collar working man against the social changes in America. He loved his country and was socially conservative in the extreme.
What about John Wayne? Now, before you say anything, let me warn you. When you're talking about the Duke, we ain't just talking about an actor. You're talking about the spirit that made America great.
Are you kidding?
His opinions on subjects like race and women's equality were always good for an argument with his liberal daughter and even more liberal son-in-law.
Good, I can mail my letter today and it'll get to Washington by Monday.
Washington? Are you writing to Washington?
That's right. Michael wrote the president.
Write to the president about what?
all the things we've been talking about, the pollution of our air, the pollution of our water, the way us housewives have no protection from foods without nutrition, how they make products with harmful things in them. Like, you saw what happened to Michael from that shirt.
You, Michael Stivnik, meathead, you have the nerve to write to the President of the United States about your rash?
Edith would always try to make peace.
Maybe he knows a good skin man.
Monday, Monday, happy day. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy day. Thursday, Friday, happy day. The weekend comes, but back will hum. Ready to race to you.
Another popular program, Happy Days, about family life in the 1950s, offered an escape from the social issues of the day.
Goodbye, gray sky, hello blue. There's nothing can hold me when I hold you. Seems so right, it can't be wrong. Rocking and rolling all week long.
Music also changed. In the 1960s, folk music was popular. Many of those folk songs were about social issues. But in the 1970s, there was hard rock and punk.
Here's Wonder Mike, Hank, and Master G, the Sugar Hill Gang.
And in 1979, a group called the Sugar Hill Gang brought rap music to national attention with a hit called Rapper's Delight.
And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say, up jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock.
In bookstores, the growing number of self-help books offered another sign of social change. These books advised people about ways to make themselves happier. One of the most popular self-help books was I'm Okay, You're Okay by Dr. Thomas A. Harris. It was published in 1969 and led the way for many other popular psychology books throughout the 70s. Politically, the United States went through several changes during the 1970s. For most of the 60s, the nation was governed by liberal democratic administrations. Then, in 1968, a conservative Republican, Richard Nixon, was elected president. Nixon won a second term 4 years later, but had to resign in 1974 because of the Watergate scandal. Nixon's vice president, Gerald Ford, took his place. 2 years later, Ford was defeated by Jimmy Carter, a Democrat who, until then, was little known nationally. The election showed that Americans were angry with the Republican Party because of Watergate, but they soon became unhappy with President Carter. They blamed him for failing to improve the economy and for failing to end a crisis involving American hostages in Iran. He lost his re-election campaign to Ronald Reagan.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
Reagan, a Republican, won two terms and led the nation during most of the 1980s. For many people, the Reagan years offered a renewed sense of economic opportunity. Reagan reduced taxes, which increased his popularity. But the national debt grew as he raised military spending to put pressure on the Soviet Union. The self-centeredness of many people in the 70s and 80s gave rise to terms like the me generation. And there was the rise of yuppies, young urban professionals remaking older neighborhoods in cities, often displacing poorer people. Popular entertainment at that time was often about financial success.
Premiering Sunday, April 2nd, Dallas, where money buys power and passion breeds conflict.
Dallas was a TV drama about a Texas oil family with more money and more problems than they knew what to do with. It became a hit, not just in the United States, but around the world. Actor Larry Hagman played J.R.
Well, your daddy lacked the killer instinct. He forgave those who transgressed against him. People just weren't afraid of him. And he overlooked old J.R.'s golden rules.
And what might they be?
Don't forgive and don't forget. And do unto others before they do unto you. And most especially, keep your eye on your friends, because your enemies will take care of themselves. Oh, and one other thing. The oil business is a little bit like a poker game. It's good to get caught bluffing early on, because after that, somebody's going to call you when you got a winning hand.
Dynasty was another popular series about rich people behaving badly. One of its stars was veteran actor John Forsythe.
Those banks are going to find out that they've got more than they can handle. Denver Carrington is Blake Carrington. And they'll come begging to me to run that company again. I know they will. And I'll make them get down on their knees when they come begging.
There was also Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, a series about real-life wealthy people, hosted by Robin Leach.
Our bustling capital city combines the chic with the freak, the old guard with the avant-garde. So let's go upper deck with a couple of my good friends and run away with the rich and famous.
And at the movie theater, there was the 1987 film Wall Street.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Michael Douglas played a character named Gordon Gekko, who earns his wealth by raiding companies and illegally trading on inside information.
Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed, in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind, and greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Thank you very much.
Good triumphed over evil in the Rambo action films starring Sylvester Stallone. He played a troubled hero who had fought in Vietnam. The films were violent, but they represented a more positive view than society had shown in the past toward veterans of that unpopular war. In the 1980s, people came to fear a new disease that could be spread by sex or blood. It was the rise of the AIDS epidemic. At the same time, a new drug, crack cocaine, started a wave of violence in American cities. Technology was also on the rise.
You don't have to be a genius to use a computer. Let Computerland show you how easy it is to manage your own small business or home finances with the Atari 800. Record-keeping, information, communication, and a world of new ideas from Atari.
Personal computers appeared in more and more offices, schools, and homes. The 1980s brought stardom to young entertainer Michael Jackson. And no history of the 80s would be complete without noting the rise of music television, better known as MTV. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way.